Chapter 17. The Small and Unspectacular. In the late 1880s, Egypt's pyramids of Giza near Cairo attracted both archaeologists and the eccentric. Imaginative astronomers talked of them as ancient calendars that used the heavens to measure time. Strange visitors with theories about ancient Egyptian units of measurement, such as the cubit, clustered around the Great Pyramid with tape measures. Some even attempted to chip away the edges of boulders to make them correspond to their calculations. Fortunately, two members of the Petrie family of English surveyors became interested in Giza. The Petrie family had a long history of casual scientific inquiry. Flinders Petrie, 1853 to 1942, was largely self-educated and something of an eccentric. He learned surveying and geometry from his father. And in 1872, the pair of them made the first precise survey of Stonehenge. They always talked of surveying the pyramids accurately, a task no one had attempted before. In 1880, at the age of 27, Flinders Petrie left for Egypt to survey the pyramids of Giza, just as General Pitt Rivers was starting his excavations at Cranbourne Chase. Within a week of his arrival in Egypt, Petrie was settled comfortably in a rock-cut tomb near Giza. His survey took 2 years to complete, during which time he set up accurate survey points and studied the construction of the pyramids. His work attracted numerous visitors, among them Pitt Rivers. Petrie thoroughly enjoyed himself, living simply and padding around the pyramids in bare feet, well clear of the tourists. His first book, The Pyramids and Temples of Giza, appeared in 1883 to universal acclaim. His measurements provided a new basis for the study of the pyramids. At the time, Egyptology was in turmoil. It lacked precision, and looting was commonplace. Sickened by the destruction, Petrie decided to turn from surveying to excavation. Influential scholars urged the Egypt Exploration Fund to send him to work in the Nile Delta, excavating cities. From the beginning, there was order and method to his work, although he used huge numbers of workers and proceeded very speedily by modern standards. He employed trenchers, shaft sinkers, and stone cleaners, supported by gangs of earth carriers. Work started at 5:30 in the morning and ended at 6:30 in the evening, with a noon break in the heat of the day. Unlike his predecessors, Petrie was always on site. He solved the problem of looting by paying his laborers well and by providing housing to ensure their loyalty. By 1885, Petrie was operating at Naukratis, a commercial center that had a powerful monopoly on trade between Egypt and the eastern Mediterranean after the 7th century BC. There were 107 men working on the site, with only two European supervisors. They moved tons of earth as they cleared part of a temple and a great enclosure built by the pharaoh Susenes I of the 21st dynasty, 1047 to 1001 BC. Petrie also recovered enormous quantities of pottery and baskets of papyri. Some of these he mounted between glass and had translated. This was when he realized that small objects were of great importance. Earlier excavators had largely ignored them. With his Naukratis excavations, Petrie established a routine that he followed for years. All the finds, however small, were shipped to England. A report on the excavations appeared promptly at the end of each winter season of excavation, ahead of the next season. He paid his workers fixed sums for their finds, thereby keeping important artifacts from falling into the hands of local dealers. It was fortunate that he did so, for at Naukratis, many of the objects buried in foundation trenches were easily portable coins with dates or inscribed ornaments that could be dated precisely. Using these, he could then date the surrounding structures. This was a major innovation that had never before been tried in Egypt. In 1887, Petrie became an independent excavator. He moved from the Nile Delta to the fertile Fayum Depression west of the Nile. There he tunneled into the pyramid of the 12th dynasty pharaoh Amenemhat at Horara around 1840 BC. That excavation was unsuccessful in that he found nothing of any significance, but he became interested in nearby Roman cemetery dating to AD 100 to 250 that was filled with mummies adorned with vivid portraits of their owners, painted in colored wax on wooden panels. The pictures had once hung on house walls and had been lashed to the mummies after death. Petrie found so many that he complained that his tent was filled with stores, cooking utensils, and mummies stored under his bed for safety. Back in London, he mounted a major exhibition of his finds, including some portraits, in the same Egyptian hall where Giovanni Belzoni had staged his exhibition some 75 years earlier. See Chapter 2. An elderly visitor to the display recalled the original exhibition and the tall figure of Belzoni. Large crowds turned out to view the finds, which contributed to making Egyptology a respected and popular science. Season after season, Petrie returned to the Nile. In 1888, he investigated a workers' community at Kahun in the Fayum Depression. This 12th Dynasty settlement had housed the families of those building the nearby El Lahun Pyramid of Pharaoh Senesret II, 1897 to 1878 BC. The compact, walled town was virtually intact. Petrie cleared numerous houses, recovering many domestic artifacts. These enabled him to reconstruct the existence of an ordinary person at the time, a life of constant, often brutally hard work. Apart from the work in the fields, many commoners labored on public works for meager rations. Their skeletons show clear evidence of hard labor. Theirs were lives of anonymous drudgery. They supported the state and its leaders, but to all intents and purposes were invisible. Unlike most of his contemporaries, who were more interested in large monuments and tombs, Petrie realized that ancient Egyptian civilization was a complex society that depended on the toil of thousands of humble workers. Next, Petrie turned his attention to the small 18th dynasty town of Gurab near Memphis, which dated back to around 1500 BC. After noticing some unusual painted pot fragments on the surface, he cleared a small walled enclosure close to the temple. He soon found more of these fragments in houses. The mysterious finds turned out to be Mycenaean vessels from Greece, similar to those unearthed by Heinrich Schliemann at Mycenae. 3 years later, Petrie himself visited Mycenae, where he recognized vessels imported from Egypt that dated to about the same period as his Gurab finds. This was a classic example of the cross-dating method that Oscar Montelius had relied on generations earlier, using objects of known age from one area to date sites elsewhere. See Chapter 11. Petrie declared that the latter stages of Mycenaean civilization dated to between 1500 and 1200 BC. Petrie had a profound knowledge of European and Eastern Mediterranean archaeology. He built a reputation based on accurate plans, good excavations, comprehensive records, and prompt publication. This made him almost unique among archaeologists of the day and secured him access to a circle of knowledgeable scholars whose interests ranged far wider than their own excavations. From Gurab, Petrie moved to El Amarna, the capital of Pharaoh Akhenaten in Upper Egypt. This king was a controversial figure who abandoned worship of the powerful sun god Amun in favor of a new form of sun worship involving the solar disk, Aten. Akhenaten moved his capital downstream to El Amarna, away from Thebes, in 1349. On his death, this capital was abandoned, providing Petrie with a unique opportunity to examine a sacred city. His large-scale excavations uncovered the royal palace's decorated pavements and wall paintings. Tourists flocked to see these and trampled over the local villages' fields during the growing season. One farmer was so infuriated that he smashed the priceless floors. One of Petrie's most important discoveries came when he located the spot where a woman had found some tablets written in cuneiform, the international diplomatic script of the time. He excavated a chamber and two pits filled with tablets in what became known as the House of Correspondence of Pharaoh. The 300 or more Armana tablets provide an archive of Egyptian dealings with the little-known Hittite civilization in Turkey from about 1360 BC into Akhenaten's reign. There are letters about the exchange of gifts, about alliances and diplomatic marriages. And there's correspondence with the unstable patchwork of states to the east, with minor rulers promising to kneel before the pharaoh 7 times, and then 7 times again. Egyptian officials were also corresponding with independent kingdoms like Alashia on Cyprus, an important source of copper. Then, as now, the Middle East was in constant turmoil. There were plots and counterplots, rebellious kings and military campaigns, usually accompanied by political grandstanding. To describe the archive as priceless is a huge understatement. Petrie encouraged young archaeologists to excavate with him, and he trained up a generation of future Egyptologists. Among them was a young Englishman named Howard Carter, an artist with the Egypt Exploration Fund. Nothing could have prepared Carter for the excavation camp, where he had to build his own mud brick house and roof it with reeds. There was no bedding, but newspaper worked quite well. Empty food cans stored small finds. Newcomers received a week's supervision and then were left on their own with a few trained workers. But Carter flourished and worked at the great temple of the sun god Aten and elsewhere in the city. His experience under Petrie would prove invaluable in later years. See Chapter 21. In 1892, without any university degree, Petrie became the first professor of Egyptology at University College London. He promptly celebrated by discovering pre-dynastic Egypt, societies without hieroglyphic script that had flourished along the Nile before the time of the pharaohs. This occurred when he stumbled upon a vast cemetery near the town of Nakeda in Upper Egypt, filled with skeletons accompanied by simple clay vessels. In 1894 alone, Petrie excavated 2,000 burials. As always, Petrie developed a system for his cemetery excavations. As soon as boys had detected soft patches in the sand and had traced the edge of the burial pit, he moved them on. Then, ordinary workers cleared soil away from the pots. Finally, expert excavators with a delicate touch cleared around the skeleton and pots before leaving the final work to Ali Mohammed As-Suefi, Petrie's burial expert, who did nothing but clear graves. It was all very well that these pots were nice to look at, but there were no inscriptions or papyri to provide a chronology. However, similar jars came to light at other sites nearby, like Diospolis Parva. Eventually, Petrie had excavated enough graves for him to be able to study the gradual changes in vessel shape. The handles were especially useful for classification purposes, changing as they did as time passed from functional grips into mere painted squiggles. Petrie arranged the finds into a series of stages categorizing grave furniture groups, starting with Stage 30, or ST-30. He assumed that he had not found the earliest, which would have been ST-1. ST-80 linked the sequence to the time of the first pharaoh, in about 3000 BC. Sequence dating was one of Petrie's most important contributions to archaeology. It was, of course, no substitute for dating sites in years, but that was not to come until the arrival of radiocarbon dating. See Chapter 27. Nevertheless, Petrie introduced an ordered sequence for the history of Egypt before the pharaohs. Flinders Petrie's range of work and his legacy were extraordinary. Unfortunately, however, he was tactless and quarrelsome. His lack of formal education would often lead him to insist that he, and he alone, was right. Hardly a positive quality in an archaeologist. In 1926, as new and more restrictive regulations came into force in Egypt, Petrie moved his operations to Palestine. There he continued his work until the Second World War began, dying in Jerusalem at the age of 89. During his long years along the Nile, Petrie brought order to excavation, established a firm chronology for ancient Egypt, and brought small, inconspicuous objects to the forefront.